Welcome back to the Theia Podcast, where we talk to the brightest minds in the worlds of finance, tech, and Bitcoin. Today, I have with me Corey Clipston, the CEO of Swan. Corey, what a time to be filming an episode today. Things are very crazy.
How are you doing, man? I need to figure out how to make like a B symbol with my fingers or something. But pretty epic. We were just noting it ripped through 85K, headed toward 86 as we hit record. No idea what it'll be in a few days when you air this, but as of now, looking pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in your mind, there are a number of things that could be driving this thing. Obviously, that we had the Trump trade for a pretty long time. Trump's odds, according to betting sites like Polymarket, were moving basically one-to-one with Bitcoin's price. Now there's, you know, extreme euphoria, so it seems, coming into the market. What do you think's behind, you know, this rally and this bull market at large?
I do think there is a lot of that, sort of the expectation that, you know, there's a favorable environment here with the administration layered on to some favorable macro environment things. I think there was going to be an inevitable expectation for money printing regardless, in that there's always kind of a bit of a lull of uncertainty and sort of people being unwilling to invest. I talked to a lot of people across a lot of different sectors, and there were a lot of people just kind of holding back the checkbook, just waiting for the election to be over, and they were going to start writing checks and making investments regardless of who won. So there is that, but there's just this extra, because the Trump campaign has so many Bitcoin advocates involved, whether it's JD Vance, who we know is a hodler, or just other Republicans in their orbit, whether it's Cynthia Lummis and her strategic reserve bill, or RFK2 coming on potentially as part of the administration. And obviously he's got a great Bitcoin policy platform out there. So I think people are just kind of hopeful that something will happen. And I just want to make sure that people's expectations, it's all bullish because it's in the conversation. And what actually comes through, like whether the government actually buys a million coins or 200 coins or even keeps, you know, the Bitfinex hack coins or gives them back or whatever. Like, I think the point is that it's in the conversation. And if you get to the point where the federal government of the United States even holds, you know, a little bit of Bitcoin, just the process of going through and figuring out the custody and having to have those conversations and making different committees talk about it and get to the point where they're comfortable with, you know, whatever combination of Bank of New York Mellon and, you know, State Street, JP Morgan, Coinbase, whatever, you know, holds onto these coins, and they have to think about multi-sig and kind of the Bitcoin nuclear football, like just forcing them to actually have that conversation and all of the people that's going to infect with the Bitcoin mind virus. Like, it's going to be the Bitcoin friends they make along the way that's going to be the real win there. Whatever happens, this motion is positive.
Exactly. I mean, the big thing, just like you said, Bitcoin is now in the national conversation, right? And as much as we rag on the US dollar as Bitcoiners, we still, as a nation, are the most powerful country on the planet, right? From that from a financial perspective, from a military perspective, and having that national conversation, it's no doubt that it's going to drive other countries to do the exact same thing. We have countries like El Salvador, who obviously hold a great deal of Bitcoin, the Kingdom of Bhutan, and if you normalize it by a percentage of their GDP, the U.S. currently has like 250,000 Bitcoin, something like that. That's 0.06% of GDP. El Salvador has 1.5% of their GDP in Bitcoin. The Kingdom of Bhutan owns 34% of their GDP in Bitcoin. And so now that the conversation is being had by the United States, do you think it's going to drive FOMO from other nation states to try to front run what is the world's monetary leader, potentially actively accumulating Bitcoin, or even just formalizing the Bitcoin we already own as a strategic reserve?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that it's already happening. You know, we're a few years in here where there have been pretty strong rumors about, you know, whether it's, you know, probably China nuclear mining for the CCP and them having a little bit of a kitty. We know that the Russians mine Bitcoin. There's certainly a number of Gulf nations that are mining Bitcoin for themselves, not for companies, in partnership sometimes with people in the West. So I think it's happening. I think what will be the next step will be if someone actually is printing money specifically to buy Bitcoin. And I don't know like how close we are to doing that. I guess by definition, if you are just buying Bitcoin and not mining it, you know, you're probably by definition printing money to buy Bitcoin. So I think that will be, you know, these strategic purchases beyond the, you know, I think it's one Bitcoin a day or whatever that El Salvador buys. There isn't anybody else with a real Bitcoin buying program. And I think that'll be the next shoe to drop. And that would be very interesting. And then, of course, you know, the other massive catalyst that could get pulled forward is really just a regulatory change in the US around capital gains tax. And if they, you know, got rid of capital gains tax, this is something that, you know, if I were looking at this 3 years ago or even 6 months ago, I would have said definitely wouldn't happen till the 2030s and probably more like 2035 to 2038 or something like that. But with this kind of momentum that Bitcoin seems to have in this administration, it might be the type of thing that you just really want to start putting policy papers out on right away and just try to jam it through in the next 2 years, really, before it's kind of a lame duck administration. But, you know, really take your swing and go hard at cap gains tax as the thing to try to accomplish in the next 2 years, because otherwise I think you'll probably end up waiting at least a decade. And that really is when you can move into Bitcoin being used as a medium of exchange. So I've always thought that that's something that would be demanded once the market cap of Bitcoin is more like 20 trillion, you know, so something, you know, closer to gold, $1 million a coin. I thought that, you know, essentially there'd be such a groundswell of support for people wanting to spend Bitcoin or sell it without having to pay cap gains tax so they can live their lives. And you know, that's when the balance of pros and cons for the government unlocking that spending and pumping that into the economy would be enough at that size to pass that and have the motivation to pass that. But maybe we can get an early gift if things are really that bullish. That's the kind of thing like I think you should take a swing at. So BPI and everybody else, like, do your thing, put out the papers. Daniel Batten, please take 3 months off of mining and energy stuff and go ahead and hit cap gains in the US for us. And let's see if we can get this done.
Phenomenal. Well, Grant, David, Jason, everybody at the Bitcoin Policy Institute, you heard the man, get started on those papers. So let's expound on that, you know, just a little bit more. For the viewers at home, what are the implications of eliminating cap gains tax so that Bitcoin can be actually used as a medium of exchange? Obviously, people hold Bitcoin as a higher proportion of their portfolio, but one of the reservations many people have is they still have this massive cash balance for their day-to-day needs, paying bills, transacting with other people, things like that. So in your mind, what are the implications of eliminating capital gains tax, and what kind of, you know, form, however likely, do you think that that has pretty high probability of taking?
Yeah, I would just say I think so many more people would be willing to hold a lot more Bitcoin, which means you just have a lot more purchases of Bitcoin. If they know that they can spend it or sell it without incurring cap gains tax, it just kind of removes that friction on the way out. It just creates an opportunity for Bitcoin to be much more in the conversation and in the consideration set for a seller, so a merchant that's on the receiving end of a transaction and the spender, just knowing that you don't have that friction in between with you know, a good chunk of the transaction essentially going out the door to the government from the cap gains tax. So that's why we spend dollars for the most part instead of Bitcoin, and it's why, you know, people don't want to be you know, I think it's starting to get pretty attractive to a lot more people to just be, you know, 1x long Bitcoin, which just means that Bitcoin is your store of value, it's your medium of exchange, it's your unit of account. And it's only this cap gains friction that gets in the way of doing that for a lot of people.
For sure. So I want to ask you about Saylor's 2121 plan. 3 years, $42 billion into Bitcoin. He just announced this morning. Obviously, MicroStrategy stock, given the performance over the weekend, was going to do unbelievably well this Monday, regardless of what happened. But Saylor dropped a bomb. He's acquiring another like 28,000 Bitcoin for $2 billion. You know, just what are your general thoughts on what Saylor is doing, and if we're going to see this trend be adopted by other major companies now that Bitcoin is really taking off here and they can see what it does for your stock price?
So I did see one tweet from an Anon on X, which is the paper of record now, that said that the price was actually locked. So the average purchase price was 74K. So it's supposedly done. And I trust that as much as anything printed in the New York Times these days. So evidently it's completely done, lock, print it. 74K was the average purchase price. Yeah, I mean that's I think been part of another bullish run for Bitcoin this morning, and I'm sure will be appreciated by the MSTOrs, the Moon Boys tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we talk about Bitcoin corporate treasury strategy. Obviously, Dylan's doing some really great things for Metaplanet over there in Japan. Here stateside, we also have Semler Scientific. But one of the bigger stories probably will not happen, right, given the nature of it. But Microsoft voting on whether or not in December, I think December 11th is the date to begin considering holding Bitcoin. That motion for consideration is going up during their next shareholder meeting. You know, what's your probability analysis on that actually happening? Or do you think this event is just significant enough? It's significant enough that it's happening. It doesn't matter whether or not they actually begin adding it to their balance sheet.
I think what's significant is a lot of people have just found out and figured out that you can get this, in front of the board and up for a vote for any public company. And so everyone's kind of going through their portfolios and getting in touch with their brokers and figuring out like what's this process. So I just spoke with Bitcoin Pilot on a Spaces yesterday with it was me, Fred, and Wayne from their Spaces, and we had Tad, the former Sotheby's CEO, on there for about an hour, and this guy Bitcoin Pilot, who I wasn't aware of previously, is a big Amazon guy, been a hodler for a long time, and you have to have held the stock for at least 3 years to put this in front, and he's figured it out, and he personally is the guy making sure that it goes in front of Amazon over the next year, and they're going to have to vote on it too. Swan is working on just a post basically laying out exactly what the steps are that you can do this for any public company and force the board to consider it and force it to be put to a shareholder vote. But that's the kind of thing that's sparked by this. Somebody got it in their head that they were going to make Microsoft confront this and vote on it, but it can be done for all 6,000-7,000 public companies in the US across the NYSE and the NASDAQ, which is hilarious and amazing. And now it's an obvious target for all Bitcoiners that have a little extra time on their hands, and they think there's a company in their portfolio that they want to force to vote on this, and the board will have to actually consider it and say yay or nay. It's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. Yeah, no, the orange pilling strategies of Bitcoiners know no bounds. And the beauty of public equity markets is that this can happen. I want to shift gears here and ask you a little bit about the ETFs. And we could talk about the significance of the inflows, but then also any other risk factors. Where your head is at regarding like the centralization of all this Bitcoin held, obviously on behalf of clients, but regardless with one entity. So last Thursday, record-breaking day for inflows into the ETFs, almost 18,000 Bitcoin. So at those prices, $1.35 billion. And that puts total BUM, Bitcoin under management, across these US-based spot ETFs at $76.1 billion. So to you, what's the significance of these inflows? The fact that they're still so high this far along, these inflows look like basically the inflows that we saw at not just at previous all-time highs, but when they launched. What's the significance of the inflows? And then also, do you view any risks associated with all this Bitcoin held across these 11 entities?
Yeah, so look, I'll hit the second point first. I think you're going to see diversification of the custody relationships for the ETFs. So I think where they kind of started with Coinbase because it was just easy and that was the one that you could get approved very quickly. I think they're all looking at diversifying that across other entities. And this, again, will kind of dovetail with SAB 121, where it'll be easier for more of the traditional firms to custody Bitcoin. So I expect that to happen kind of very quickly. I also expect, BitGo to pick up some of that business away from Coinbase. And, I think BNY Mellon obviously would be, for most of these Wall Street firms, preferable to Coinbase for custodying some of that. So I think you'll just see it kind of spread out a little bit, which is a good thing. But I also think that you'll see a lot of pressure over the coming years to alter them so that they're not just cash create, cash redeem, and that you'll actually be able to redeem in kind. I think that's something that the market will just demand and that they will eventually shift into that format, just like GBTC had to shift from their model into this ETF model. It's just something that the market will want. Because at the end of the day, as people go down the rabbit hole and understand Bitcoin a bit, you know, they don't want a paper IOU. Lots and lots of people come to the realization that, hey, the whole point is having this actually outside of the system. And, you know, okay, maybe there's like a boots on neck nationwide 6102 thing that happens someday, but probably not. Probably that actually looks more like being able to get after the coins that are custodied by systemically important Wall Street institutions and getting at those, not the ones that you have in your own personal control. And so I think people want that, and I think they'll demand it. And I think that there will be some kind of asymptote where the ETF inflows at some point just start to kind of go asymptotic to some degree, as far as the Bitcoin owned in them. We haven't seen a big wave of ETF sellers and profit takers, which is coming and is going to be fuel for the potential downside after the bull market. You know, and I think that's something we've never seen before, is a bunch of boomers that don't understand Bitcoin, you know, or TradFi investors that don't understand Bitcoin that bought the ETFs, haven't done the research. And then, you know, Bitcoin starts to plummet from, you know, 300K, dips under 200K, and they freak out. And, you know, if you thought that the days of, you know, 70, 80% drawdowns in Bitcoin bear markets was over, you know, this would be a scenario where you may be wrong on that one. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I'm bullish that everybody understands that, you know, you should buy the dip, and that, you know, that we're in some kind of super cycle that just kind of trundles up forever over time without cycles again. But I think that the history of human psychology and market, you know, animal behavior is probably tips in favor of another big bull run and big crash. Unfortunately, that's probably still the type of zeitgeist we have. I think most of the people that are buying Bitcoin right now still don't really understand it. And that's just kind of inevitable, that they'll buy the shiny object on the way up and they'll freak out when it starts coming down.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bitcoin in and of itself is a brand new asset, brand new kind of asset, but market psychology does not change. And Bitcoin's been the beneficiary of these massive inflows. And I think a lot of, just like you said, I think a lot of people begin owning these ETFs and realizing what Bitcoin is, the actual value prop of it, they're going to opt for spot Bitcoin instead. And then also those very same ETF investors who had their financial advisors rotate them into it on the upside, we're going to get a great deal of reflexive selling on the downside from these same investors, you know, once they start freaking out. I too do not think the days of 70, 80% drawdowns in Bitcoin are bygone. You mentioned the SAB 121 rule. For viewers who might not be aware, what is the SAB 121 rule for Bitcoin crypto custody? And what's the significance of the SEC beginning to exempt banks from SAB 121, BNY Mellon being obviously the first one that happened last month or 2 months ago?
Yeah, it mostly just comes down to capital requirements. So it's something like having to have basically matching capital reserves in I guess it's dollars probably, or money market accounts or short-term T-bills or something like that, to match the assets that you're holding on behalf of other customers. And, you know, that's really onerous and not the best use of capital for these banks and for these kind of mainline custodians if they're forced to do that. And so Bank of New York Mellon recently got an exception to that approved. I didn't go deep into it and understand why they got the exception, but basically they're allowed to custody Bitcoin. And, you know, lots of people have been talking to them. We spoke with them recently and kind of got their roadmap. So they're hoping to be kind of in market and actually doing business by Q2 of next year. And I think there will be a bunch to follow, because again, you know, no knock on the historical custodians for crypto. You know, Coinbase, Anchorage has been out there for a few years. I think BitGo's done a spectacular job for, I don't know how, getting long in the tooth, probably 11 year old company maybe at this point. So that, you know, they're good. They haven't had hacks. And I think that's fine. But at the end of the day, a lot of institutions, a lot of governments, a lot of pension plans are just going to be comfortable with these 100-year-old, you know, 150, 200-year-old institutions that they've been doing business with for so long across so many other major asset classes. And so it's not even necessarily that they're better. For certain, their tech will not be better out of the gate. That's for sure. They'll be harder to work with, but it's just that their conservatism and the sort of trustworthiness that comes with their size. Like if they screw something up, they can cover it, right? They can, you kind of reach that escape velocity where, like, let's say that, you know, State Street or JP Morgan got hacked for like $2 billion of Bitcoin. Like that'd be really existential for a, you know, a private company that was a custodian. That's not existential for somebody that can sell that in an, you know, a heartbeat tomorrow in an open market offering and cover that hole. You know, these guys get fines bigger than that every year.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's where there's going to be a big unlock, I think. And I think it'll be just, and it'll benefit a lot of the, you know, call it the integrators or the intermediaries, whether it's, you know, a Thea or a Swan or a Strike or whoever. Like if we actually have the ability to use some of these more trusted, I guess, vendors, you know, in your stack for certain things, especially for regulated segments, like it's retirement accounts and things like that, where you kind of have like laws around unfettered access to coins and things like that. It'd be a lot nicer to be able to go to market and say, hey, we use this amazing, you know, old line firm that you can trust, you know, for those. I think alongside that, you know, we'll also see a lot of development in education around things like what you guys are doing and what we do with Swan Vault. And we have some multi-institutional, multi-jurisdictional stuff coming as well for kind of like our higher end clients and corporate clients. And so I think you'll see a lot more of that kind of get approved. But it's always going to, by definition, be once a management team is kind of fully orange-pilled or fully controlled by an orange-pilled maniac, like a sailor or a similar or somebody like that, right? So it's just the vast majority is not going to be in that early adoption group. And so if you can serve them with more credible partners, it's just going to make things go faster and smoother.
Absolutely. Yeah, faster and smoother. And you know, these are institutions that have been around for hundreds of years. But you know, as you've said, I think that, and you know, and as I've said, as more people own and custody Bitcoin, you know, through these platforms, I think they're, as they learn about it, learn why it's going up and learn about the idea of owning this thing as a bearer asset, they're going to want to use Bitcoin the way it was intended to. More education is necessary, all these things. And even though it's going to make things faster and smoother, it's ultimately still going to drive people toward traditional custody solutions. They're going to want to own their coins, or at least own them on, you know, an exchange that's reputable, has been in the space, you know, in the Bitcoin only space for quite some time. Yeah, all very brilliant stuff. I want to ask you about the former CEO of Sotheby's, Tim Smith, obviously very recent, and kind of surprising orange pill for a lot of people, kind of came out of nowhere. Sotheby's, obviously one of the largest, you know, the largest, and oldest, most historic international auction houses out there. Do you think that, you know, well, I guess kind of a rhetorical question. It seems like a start of a trend, for these people whose job it is to identify value, you know, whether it's Tim or whether it's a whole host of, you know, hundreds, thousands of other CEOs around the country, particularly older ones, who begin to view Bitcoin for what it is and talk about it more openly. I think that's also going to be an accelerant for Bitcoin treasury adoption, seeing more people like the former Sotheby's CEO going out and kind of acting as an employee of the Bitcoin marketing department. Kind of, I'll give you know, some time to opine on that and where you think we're headed with that.
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the people that posted that erroneously identified him as Tim. His name is Tad. So
Oh,
get that out of
geez.
the
Yeah,
way.
no, I clicked
Tad
onto
walking
one of your
through.
quote tweets and I clicked Tim. So yeah, whoops.
So spoke with him for about an hour yesterday after blowing up his video last week, and I really like the guy. I actually know Dan Tapiero somewhat from when he got into the space 3 or 4 years ago. So it sounds like Tad is actually partners in a new fund with Dan Tapiero, which is 10T Holdings, and I forget what their new one is, RR something, and that's the one that Tad's involved in. Interestingly, he is actually a pretty seasoned CEO across a few different industries. So it's not like he was born and raised into the art world. He's been CEO of a couple of private equity owned businesses before. And then he was also CEO of Madison Square Garden Group, which is another publicly traded company. So, really broad perspective across a lot of different areas, and then also has the perspective of, having spent some time at Sotheby's. So, I think that is kind of just important to provide a little color around his background and how he talks about things. So he's just way more into markets and way more into company metrics and thinking about treasury and all these different things, versus maybe just being your kind of smoking jacket pipe thinking about art. Like he's not that guy, even though he clearly dresses well from the video I saw. Yeah, I mean he's like super bullish on MicroStrategy and has like really highly developed opinions about MNAV and all this other stuff, and like we just can rip apart their balance sheet and their the downside risks and all this different stuff. Yeah, I think it's just, look, we know that in 2024 it's not nearly as hard to get up to speed on Bitcoin as it was in 2017. Even when Saylor and Lynn Alden and Druckenmiller and kind of the class of 2020 came in, it was so much easier than it was back in 2016, 17, because there was just such an explosion of Bitcoin content, Bitcoin books, Bitcoin podcasts that came out on the heels of the 2017 bull run. It sucked people in. A lot of people, kind of saw how much noise there was. This was the genesis of, my involvement in Bitcoin and launching Give Bitcoin and then Swan, was all around trying to provide that signal through the noise. And whether it was, Stefan's podcast or Matt and Marty's podcast, I think both are 2018 vintage. Bitcoin Standard came out in 2018. Inventing Bitcoin was like early 2019. So a lot of the stuff that we kind of, point people to. And remember, so Inventing Bitcoin, I don't know if I have a copy of it here, but that's Jan's book, my co-founder at Swan. Like Tapiero, that's the guy who clearly got Tad into the business more recently. Tapiero used to bring a roller bag full of copies of Inventing Bitcoin on his business trips and just hand them out like candy. Like he would roll through Southeast Asia raising money for 10T and just hand out copies of Inventing Bitcoin. But like a book like that didn't exist. There were like, blockchain books in 2016, 2017, just full of misinformation and like misunderstanding about what was going on here. There weren't good texts to pass out. So, we just have such a shortcut now with the explosion of Bitcoin media, Bitcoin education, and just like Bitcoin signal being put out by frickin' Uncle Larry and Auntie Abby at BlackRock and Fidelity. Like you can get great education, like leave MicroStrategy aside because their education section is fantastic, obviously, and kind of draws from the same sources that we do. But like, even if you just used, only Fidelity's Bitcoin education and BlackRock's Bitcoin education and maybe Block Cash App, use their Bitcoin education and just pointed people just to those massive public vehicle education sources, they'd still do way better than somebody trying to understand Bitcoin in 2017. Dramatically better. Like the signal is so much stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. The resources have never been more widespread or better, in terms of being these Bitcoin-only educational tools. You don't have to go far for them anymore. You don't have to dig deep for them anymore. One of the things you've been tweeting out for a few weeks now is about Bitcoin being volatile. Bitcoin is so volatile, and then you say something like, "Oh, it's been up, 5% a day, 15% in a month, 30%, 50% in a week, 30% in a month, 120 in a year." Talk about one of the. This is a line that's been brought out this cycle is about, "Oh, Bitcoin is extremely volatile," but volatility is where the outsized returns come from. It's a feature. It's not a bug. So I'll give you a little bit of time to kind of speak to that, why volatility is historically, especially when it comes to Bitcoin, has been considered something that's terrible. But Bitcoin right now, having crashed six, seven separate times, eight times to market bottoms throughout its history, it's volatile. It's now at all-time highs. So speak a little bit about why volatility is not actually, something bad. It's a feature.
So you made me go look it up real quick. So I've been doing the exact same tweet for over 4 years now. The first time I tweeted that was October 8th of 2020. And yeah, it's just the format is Bitcoin is way too volatile, up back then it was, up 3% in a week, 7% in a month, 27% in a year, 65% in 2 years, 4,300% in 5 years. And I've been doing the same tweet, basically at intervals for 4 years now. And yeah, it's just pointing out like upside volatility is really good. And it's going to come with some downside volatility mixed in there. But, the CAGR of this thing over the years, the compounded growth rate of this thing just beats any other asset class that you could reasonably invest in with this kind of risk reward profile. And I say that because there's another level to it that's different than what you can get with any company or any index, which is if you actually really understand Bitcoin and really, and I do say understand, not believe, like if you actually understand what it's doing and that it actually is inevitable that more and more of the 8 billion people on Earth and all of their associated companies and governments understand Bitcoin the way that you do, and that they will store more and more of their value in it, it's inevitable that with a fixed supply, the purchasing power of Bitcoins will go up. It's inevitable. And there's nothing else like that. There's key man risk with every company, and there's operational risk and regulatory risk and all these different things. And there are certainly headwinds when it comes to, policy decisions like cap gains tax that we were talking about, or, some kind of State Department Five Eyes led crackdown on Bitcoin globally, which I just think that's, the chances of something like that are just so infinitesimal at this point. Like it's almost out of the consideration set. I just think it's flown the coop and Bitcoin's here to stay. And, that's a big, big deal. Or other battles that it's fought that just seem like they're very in the rear view now. Like it felt like we felt a really heated battle. We fought a very heated battle for like 5-6 years against crypto. And, Ethereum was going to flip in Bitcoin and ultrasound money and, Solana's going to the moon, like all this stuff. And it's like just the achievement of separating Bitcoin from crypto, the way that they're talked about separately in the media every day, and that Bitcoin isn't really hardly ever talked about as a subset of crypto anymore. And that all of the public statements of the politicians, they say Bitcoin and crypto, like that's it. Like you won, like do a victory lap. You separated Bitcoin from crypto. Good job. Congratulations. It's awesome. And so, so what's next? What's next is just like, it's just more, it's more and more. It's the like the Kylo Ren meme, on Twitter. It's like more, like that's all you can do is just think about what's the next thing that could be a bullish catalyst and like work toward that. But, I think, and this is just really for Bitcoin as an asset, like an investable asset class. It just feels like pretty clear sailing right now. I think there are tremendous headwinds for Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. And I think that's where you're seeing a lot of the energy now go to is like, okay, we probably won and created, an asset class and it's probably going to the moon. But there's a bunch of things sort of structurally and from an incentive standpoint and potentially even, with layer twos and all of the work going on there to kind of scale medium of exchange in a decentralized way. What do we want this to actually look like when it is actually used as a currency widely, globally? So that's probably the battle of the next 10 years, which will be fought about ad nauseum, and it'll be just as big a battle as block size wars and, what comes first, store of value or medium of exchange. And obviously reality proved, the Austrians right and the Bcashers wrong when it came to that. And I think that we've got a new set of problems. Every bit of success puts you in a new situation, and it creates a new set of issues that are now the most important issues to work on. And so I think cap gains tax unlocks medium of exchange, and then you've got to really get after, is this all going to be controlled by, centralized government AI overlords watching all of your transactions and making life super scary, because that's kind of the downside of digital money. Or are we going to find ways to put checks on that And what are the creative ways that you can do that? And, you know, is it really that it's not providing checks? Is it just because you actually give people the tools, you know, in accordance with, you know, kind of the cypherpunk way and be unstoppable, you know, which is the way I hope it works out.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're now faced with a new set of challenges. Crypto, you know, and Nick and I, you know, in my time at the Bitcoin layer, I'm still over there with, you know, putting crypto in quotation marks. It is in our style guide now. We do not, you know, we do not recognize this thing as a legitimate asset class. And it's extremely encouraging to see that, like you said, mainstream media pundits, when Bitcoin is talked about, it's talked about and delineated from crypto, which is an extremely good development. You'd think this is the first bull market ever where ETH BTC has not risen. Historically, Ethereum, mother of all shitcoins, rises relative to Bitcoin because high beta, right? But it's down 50% from the November 2022 bottom. And so obviously, as the bull market comes, you know, we started this interview at 85,000. We're now at 86,500. So really fantastic time to be doing an interview as bullish as this one. As bull markets go on, you see these exchanges, they want to create fancy Bitcoin yield investment products to steal clients' Bitcoin. Do you think that post-2022, what we saw with Celsius and FTX and BlockFi, do you think that that is less of a risk factor this cycle because those exchanges and products collapsed? Or do you think that it is still a risk factor that viewers of this show and Bitcoin investors writ large need to be careful of over this next cycle? And do you think that those products will take some kind of different form that'll still try to scheme investors out of their Bitcoin? What are the risk factors for investors as this cycle goes on?
So first, I would say that with Voyager, BlockFi, Celsius, is there any other one that's kind of in that category that collapsed? There was one more, I'm blanking. They didn't actually set out to steal people's Bitcoin. As horrible as most of those founders were, and as bad as their actions were, and as devious and criminal as they were, in some cases, they didn't actually. They tried to make businesses, and they did it with false promises. And the false promises were like, we run a good risk book, and we diligence our counterparties, and this is better than a savings account. Right, using the language of kind of retail banking, but actually just providing money to shitty offshore hedge funds run by kids that didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So the whole thing was kind of just the scam was largely the marketing and claiming to be doing things that they weren't. Look, some people will choose to unlock some of their purchasing power without selling because they don't want to incur the capital gains tax, right? So if we didn't have capital gains tax, people would just peel off some coins more often than they do. But if you want to be able to pay for your kid's college, or, you know, you got to replace your car because, you know, your 93 Civic is finally on its last legs because you're a Bitcoiner and, you know, you don't need new wheels, but, you know, that car's not working anymore. You know, just like non-rehypothecated, meaning like you don't lend the Bitcoin out the backside and you don't actually have a risk book of that you're managing as that centralized company that's providing the loans, has been pretty freaking safe historically. You had, you know, four and a half years of Silvergate with a zero loss ratio. I don't know what Unchained's at, probably 7.5, maybe coming up on 8 years with 0% loss ratio. And that's because they take the coins and they hold them there, and that's the collateral. And if it dips, they ask you for a top up, and it's instantly margin callable into global 24/7 liquid markets, right? And that's why Saylor calls it the pristine collateral, right? And he took out a Bitcoin backed loan from Silvergate at some point just to go, you know, uber long Bitcoin. You know, and that was a reasonable thing to do, and it was provided at a fair market rate, ended up being a higher market rate than what he can get with these converts. So why pay 7 when you can pay 0.1 or whatever these converts go out at? So I get that. But I think that is something that will be more and more popular over the coming years, and I think that people should just insist on the non-rehypothecated version. And I think those rates will come down a lot, you know, so I think you're at, you know, somewhere between maybe 13 at BitGo or maybe like 15.5 at Unchained or something like that. And I see this being in the high single digits maybe as early as next year. I just think there's a lot of capital coming into the space and it's starting to trickle down. And I think you'll be able to start getting retail loans at, and also rates coming down, right? So, if rates keep coming down, I hope that we'll be able to see, 8%, 9%. And then I think you'll also, that's just for kind of the native lenders. So that would be like the Unchains and the Ledins being able to do that, I think, by next year. But then I think you'll also see portfolio loans, essentially the way that it's always been done with stock portfolios. So, if you're an investor and you're at Fidelity or whoever, your TD Ameritrade or something, like you can take out a portfolio loan against your stocks, just the way that we always talk about Bitcoin-backed loans. You can do that with stocks. So a lot of people are just buying ETFs because they can at least borrow against it. So they're getting Bitcoin price exposure and they can borrow against it. So I would also expect that as SAB 121 goes away or more people get qualified for exceptions the way that BNY did, and you're actually able to custody Bitcoin and actually have that Bitcoin in an account with an institution that also provides portfolio loans, they're going to be able to count that balance for you. And that they're looking at your personal credit history and your credit scores, and they're able to actually, price you as an individual, not just because, it's just like one rate. It's always, 10%, 12% or whatever. So then you'll be able to start getting, SOFR plus 1.5, something like that, on a portfolio loan, kind of like what you do if you're a high credit, HELOC borrower or something like that. So it's all coming and it's also inevitable. Just be patient. And also, like, just one more word of warning, like, do not be tempted to go leverage long, risking your Bitcoin stack to buy more Bitcoin. People do it every cycle. They always get wrecked. It's almost impossible to time that. It's also almost impossible to like step away from the table if it's working and you just get people just like levering up and it's not worth it. I'm just going to give that advice. Like, I just saw so many people just get absolutely wrecked on that, thinking that they were catching a pump and like pullbacks for whatever reason. Like, you don't know what investor sentiment in the middle of a bull run is going to cause like a 40% pullback or some kind of weird macroeconomic shock or like, the new COVID, whatever the heck comes, and that just blows people out. Right. So, just be very, very, very careful with leverage. And I highly recommend it against it unless you're like a professional trader and money manager.
Absolutely. Yeah. For retail investors, do not touch leverage. If you are getting any kind of Bitcoin loan, do it in an over-collateralized fashion with an Unchained or a Ledin or one of these players that has a name in the space. And, if 30%, which I'm checking this chart live, almost 30% in the last week isn't enough for you in spot Bitcoin, it might be time to consider just going to the blackjack table instead.
And just go to Vegas.
Yeah, just go to Vegas.
This is fun. It's okay.
Exactly. So speaking of, and this is one of the last things I want to ask you about, is interest from retail. So obviously running an exchange, you probably have the ability to see what kind of user signups there are, average balances, average transaction size that are coming in maybe. So you probably have a good pulse on this. And then if you take a look at Google search trends, if you index it over the past 5 years to 100 being the highest level, we're still not even at 50, even today, relative to where we were during the all-time high back in 2021. And so you can get a pretty good pulse on this, I think, as a CEO of an exchange. Do you think retail has come onto the scene fully yet this cycle? Or do you think
not even close to fully? So it's early stages, right? So it's up about 2x month over month. So just volumes, new users per day, stuff like that is all up about 2x right now. Versus, and admittedly small numbers because we launched in, I think, late March of 2020, but like 21 over 20 was 30x at Swan. And, I think, similar large rises at other Bitcoin brokerages, in 2021. So, I think, when you see the Google search trends, plow through 100 and become the new 100 index and it pushes that other one back down from 2021, that's when it'll come. It just really started to hit. I just started getting, emails from people saying like, hey, can this, buddy of mine be a private client? Like I started to really start getting those last week I think it was really just probably right after the election. I think a lot of people were just kind of frozen and kind of not on it. And then now you got a price pump and the election's in the rear view and people want to get in.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it seems like we are just getting started. The election trepidation is now behind us, and in its place has been outright fervent bullishness. Corey, this has been fantastic. Any final thoughts about anything at all? I'll give the floor to you. Anything you want to say before we log off here?
Just try to get used to it. I know it's hard, especially for people going through their first bull market. Just really try to pay attention to what people that have been around for a long time have to say. So, it's kind of like choose your guru as well. There's a really strong incentive for people that are new to be kind of the most bullish and get kind of out over their skis because there's really no penalty for it. And so, there's kind of like a new cohort of people with each bull cycle. And, admittedly, I was, probably a beneficiary of this because I was super enthusiastic in 2021 and out there tweeting all the time and doing all the shows. But I had the approach of a statistician and somebody who studied probabilities pretty intensely, like, throughout my scholastic career and had a journalistic background. And so I always want, just the facts. And so I don't put out too much bulletard information. So just watch out, just make sure that you understand what you're buying. Invest in education. Don't just invest your time in, price predictions and price charts and kind of bullish information. Like really understand the technology, understand monetary history. Go to a resource like the Bitcoin Canon at swan.com/CANON, something like that, and find ways to get into rabbit holes to learn a lot deeper about Bitcoin. It is fun riding a bull like this. It really is. Just try to access your inner calm along the way. Stay humble, stack sats, obviously, buy the top forever, and just remember, 99% of people out there are not going to be good traders. You're better off just buying every day and holding for the long term. And Bitcoin can be your best friend if you treat it like that and treat it with that kind of respect. And, Bitcoin is volatile. It's just not too volatile, and it's volatile to the upside, but it is really volatile. And you just don't get caught off sides. That's my number one piece of advice for people going through this for the first time.
Very well said, Corey. Yeah. Invest wisely. Bitcoin is a bull. It's fun to ride a bull. But the best way to not get bucked off is to make sure that you know what you are buying and why you're buying it, not just because number go up.
Don't
Even
get
though number
bucked
go up
off,
is
Joe
fun.
says.
That's right. Do not get bucked off. Corey Clipston, thanks so much for coming on the Theia podcast. Where can
Absolutely.
people, where do you want to send people?
I want to send them to Theia because Smeet and the boys are doing good stuff. Well done. But yeah, if you want to find me, we're just swan.com and swan on Twitter. I'm Corey Clipston. It's my full name on Twitter. It's a good place to catch up on what I'm thinking about. But appreciate it, Joe. You're always doing good work. Say hi to Nick, say hi to Smeet, and have a good bull run, man. Maybe we'll check in 6 months or so and see how it's going.
Yes, sir. Likewise. Have a good bull run. Talk to you
All
soon.
right. Bye.